Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, of course, you can send it into afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question is, why doesn't the Constitution take account of the party political system? Given the impact that this has on the conduct of Parliament and how legislation is in reality conceived and passed. That's the full wording of the question that was sent into us. Graham, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
What do they mean by that?
Well, I think the quick answer is it was enough to put it in one of the political parties in the national anthem. But Sinn Féin Gael, I believe, is the actual one. But
Sinn Féin Fáil, I think.
No, I
knew that.
You were just being controversial. Sorry.
I couldn't get Sinn Solidarity because it doesn't scan right. But it's right. No. I mean, it's a terrific question, genuinely, because most constitutions, which are before World War II, do not mention political parties. And this is especially true of Westminster systems, which are parliamentary systems inspired by the system in Westminster, the English Parliament.
Yeah.
And that's because political parties didn't really exist in any form at all until the 18th century. So those institutions were developed before, in many ways, the 18th century. For constitutions which have been promulgated after, say, the Second World War, we find a lot more constitutional regulation of political parties. So just to choose one at random, the German Basic Law, Article 21, has various provisions about political parties, including parties that by reason of their aims or the behavior of their adherents seek to undermine or abolish the free democratic basic order or endanger the existence of the Federal Republic of Germany shall be unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Right. So now that's obviously because of one particular political party demolishing the democratic order in Germany.
Yes.
So that's a really interesting contrast, right? What is also really striking about under Westminster systems is how many of the things we associate with political parties, and the questioner is quite right, are basic to the day-to-day office of legislation and the operation of parliaments, are entirely based on either custom or, even more important, on the decisions of the parties themselves. So the whip system is entirely developed by political parties as a way of maintaining party discipline.
Mm. So because, I mean, it's often this phrase is often used that you're basic after an election, you get an elected dictatorship because the ruling party can just do whatever they want then, essentially. And interesting enough, the application of the whip system seems to vary depending on where you are. And,
sure.
And in the UK, there are different sorts of whips.
Yeah, they have the to three-line whips.
Yeah.
And that's how many times you underline the actual request for people to come and vote. And so the whip system, if people don't know, which is arranged by the government whip, which is a relatively recent office, or the party whip, sorry, who makes sure that members show up, which is the main thing, the first thing, and then vote the correct way. And a one-line whip is a sort of, it would be good for you to show up and it would be good for you to vote this way. A two-line whip is you have to show up and you really, really should vote this way. Mm. And a three-line whip is you have to show up and if you don't vote this way, you'll be severely punished. Now, this is what goes on in the United Kingdom. Over here, as far as I can tell, we just have whipping and not whipping, basically.
Yes, yeah. And it's rare there'd be no whipping.
Indeed.
Really, yeah.
And all of these things, I mean, it's were that it's so easy, and perhaps it's a good thing that it isn't, to say that once governments are elected, they're dictatorships, because all of these considerations and the developments of parties in the first place were based on the need to avoid having people change power and do policy through violence. And in fact, political parties are the answer to a serious coordination problem and bargaining problem in national parliaments. And the whole history, but that's true within parties as well, right? So the reason they need a whip system is that there might be lots of different disagreement within a political party.
Yeah.
And this is what we've seen in various political parties. So political party system arose in the 18th century in really quite unusual circumstances. So since Magna Carta and then reinforced by the English Civil War, parliaments in England had the power to reject and they were required to be consulted and pass money bills, you know, taxation, because that's what, in many ways, the English Civil War was about, right? You know, Charles I thought of himself as an absolute monarch, and Parliament begged to differ, and so they cut off his head. So now this, once they had to chase James, Charles I's son, James II, out of the country and defeating him at the Battle of Kinsale and Boyne, they, you know, reaffirmed this sovereign role of parliament over taxation in the English Bill of Rights of 1689 and in just about everything else which is in England's unwritten constitution. Confusingly, it's written down, but it's, you know, it's not just an oral constitution. But in any case, in the early 18th century, which is not long after 1688 and the Glorious Revolution, 1689, when the Bill of Rights is passed, you know, they had a new monarch who only spoke German, apparently, which was already a hindrance in government yes. of England, George I, who was basically acting the way kings always had. He chose his ministers himself. He was nominally an absolute monarch who only had to get these money bills through Parliament. So he'd pick a bunch of ministers, and they might not agree about stuff at all. In fact, they'd violently disagree. And if you think about how that works, you know, if you think about Middle Ages politics and so forth in England, you know, the king would have their favorites. They'd have their chief minister. It'd probably be some lord. Sometimes they were sleeping with them. And, you know, if you wanted to get rid of these favorites, you'd either have to, you know, charge them with treason and cut their heads off, get the king to hate them, right, or assassinate them, right? And so that's not a great way to be exchanging governments.
Yeah.
So with this circumstance of the early 18th century, this sort of, they arise in such a way that you can get party politics. So there's this guy, Sir Robert Walpole, who's the first prime minister of England, people often say, and the longest serving prime minister of England. He served for 20 years. And he did so by playing on the old royal system, by getting George, first the Prince of Wales, and then George I to like him, you know. And so if you wanted to make any headway in politics, you'd have to get part of the royal family, and they could never get along. To agree with you. And he eventually was able to reconcile the Prince of Wales and King George I, and in so doing got a sort of personal appeal and bond with the king. And so he was able to serve as his first or prime minister for a very long time until his death, when George II, unimaginative Hanoverians they are, was initially thinking about doing the absolute ruler thing and picking different ministers. But again, Robert Walpole was able to win him over. And one of the reasons he was able to do so is that there was the old kind of way of changing governments always waiting in the wings. So Robert Walpole and his group, the Whigs, what would eventually be described as the Whig Party, were opposed by the Tories or the ex-royalists, who were less loyal to George and the Georges than they were to the Stuarts, who were just waiting over the water and periodically appeared in the early 18th century in Scotland, especially to rebel against the crown. Mm. So that was a real motivating factor for George to give more and more power to Walpole. And in the case of George II, he was starting to look at the commanding majority Robert Walpole had in the House of Commons, which at the time was still a pretty disparate group of maverick individuals. And he knew that he couldn't get anything done, again, as Charles I found out to his cost, without the support of the House of Commons. So for that reason, you've got this cleavage between two groups of people, the Tories, as they came to be known. Both are terms of abuse. By the way, Whig was a cattle driver, and Tory was an Irish word meaning outlaw. So they both got named by their opponents. But these were sort of ideological cleavages between various people, which then, you know, translated, as things do with given human psychology, over a relatively short period of time into a sort of blind partisanship, right? You know, we're Whig people, right? And, you know, we hate the Tories, you know, and vice versa. You know, you get invested through familiar psychological in-group, out-group dynamics and what's called polarized thinking into identifying as maybe a family with a particular political party. But they're still very different from the ones we have today. I mean, not only are very few people able to vote for them in the 18th century, but, you know, they don't have this party identity. You wouldn't see it in an election. You wouldn't see, you know, vote Whig, vote Tory. The people had a lot more freedom to come up with policies. So it's in the 19th century where you start seeing this change towards, among other things, the whip system. Edmund Burke refers to whipping people into Parliament, which is making them attend, right?
Yeah.
And it's also from hunting, is the idea of whipping hounds back into line if you're hunting with hounds, which is now banned in some places. And so they start in the early part of the 19th century, they start voting quite explicitly, you know, by going to various divisions where people vote yay or nay on various various things. But they also expand the franchise quite remarkably in a series of reform bills over the 19th century. So you have a lot more people who can vote, and accordingly, you get lots more points of view. So parties find themselves having to package things as party platforms to appeal to this new mass of voters. And they also have to, and accordingly, they have to exercise party discipline. Increasingly, people are actually voting on their ballots for an actual political party where the name is attached to a candidate. You know, with far more candidates to select from because there's so many more people getting involved in politics, they need to, I mean, say nobody knows you, right, in the area, but they know that you support this party.
Yes.
And they know that you're trying to work out, as all political institutions have to do, some kind of workable majority in the House of Commons. It sort of puts the pressure both on people to coalesce around particular parties, but also to whip them to make sure that they do what they're told. Otherwise, governments continue to collapse, policies don't get enacted, and then you have to go back to the people, and they don't like that after a certain point. Ask the people of Northern Ireland about that. Mm. So, but, you know, we first see whipping quite late. In, you know, the first formal request was in 1853. The first written request, so you could put lines under it, was in 1879. And even in 1882, it was so novel that it's being mocked by Gilbert and Sullivan in their musical, their production, Iolanthe, where they say, you know, fortunately, you know, when members have to check all their consciences and reason and brains at the door of the voting chamber of the legislature, of the parliament, fortunately that nature always does contrive that every boy and every gal that's born into the world alive is either a little liberal or else a little conservative. Right. So it's fortunate for the world that everyone at birth has to find themselves in one of those. Yeah, well, you know.
In the American system, one gets the impression that there's not much of a whip system there. Is that because the Constitution expressly didn't want political parties to exist?
There is a whip system, but it's not as effective because of it's unlike, you know, the executive being responsible to the parliament. And this is why there's a real pressure on people to form parties. There's really pressure on Leo Varadkar to be a good party man, right? Because, you know, he's gone if he loses the confidence of the House, right? And that is in the Constitution, it should be said. The idea that, you know, the executive has to command the confidence of the Dáil. But parties are not mentioned. But they're a very useful way of retaining the confidence of the Dáil. In the case of the United States system, the executive is not responsible to the Houses of Congress. And so people are much more maverick. While they try and put a lot of pressure on senators and congresspersons to vote a particular way, they're notorious for losing people. And that's what the Republicans are facing right now in the Senate. They can only lose one or two people and they don't get anything passed. But, you know, initially the plan was not to have a partisan government. And in fact, George Washington, in his farewell address, warned against political parties. James Madison in Federalist 10, which is probably one of the most famous founding documents of political theory in the U.S., warns against the dangers of faction. And that's because, you know, factions, political parties are private interests which are set against other private interests and leads to not just sort of bickering and stasis, but nothing getting done, but potentially to the downfall of the republic. This is one of the reasons why we have political parties. Is if political parties can't form this majority making role, if they can't allow bargaining and coalition forming to happen, then there's a real threat to democratic institutions. Mm. You know, if they just can't agree anything, and that's what happened in Weimar Germany, and that was the worry behind James Madison. But what we saw, of course, is Washington did the sort of absolute ruler thing in a way, even though he was a constitutional president, by picking people with wildly different opinions in the form of Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson as two of his chief ministers. And they're both geniuses, so it must have been made for interesting reading for George Washington. But as soon as George Washington retires as president, parties spring up.
Yes.
So, and a vicious inter-party warfare breaks out. So it didn't work, as you may know.
Yeah. Because I don't think they do it as much anymore, but in the American system, they used to have this thing, earmarks, where you could have a bill that had to do with healthcare, but somebody says, I won't vote for that unless you build a bridge in my constituency. And it was pretty corrupt, really.
Well, that's the thing.
Sense.
You know, though it is, and it still is. Yeah. You'll be happy to know. I mean, that's one of the things. Now, the American legislative process is incredibly complicated. And A lot of the operation, insofar as they involve parties, and in a way, the U.S. has inscribed parties into its political system to a remarkable degree. So, for example, if you go and register as a voter, you have the option of registering as a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. Right. And in, depending on what state you're in, you can vote in the Republican primary or you can vote in either primary. Right. That takes party politics to a whole new level, really. And again, lots of the informal stuff, whipping and other caucusing and so forth, is a function of the political parties themselves. But the process is incredibly complicated. And if you don't have a whip system where people are afraid of losing their seats because they've betrayed the party, they've lost the party whip, as we say, right? Then you have to bribe them. And you bribe them by giving them stuff in their constituency. And we could do a whole show on stupid stuff they've put into bills in the United States, like the road to nowhere or railway museums in the middle of nowhere. It's great stuff.
Yeah. Now, I suppose we should end in where we started back in Ireland. The Constitution doesn't recognize political parties per se, but are there regulations around political parties?
Yeah, well, I mean, parties play an incredibly important role. I mean, just the business of the House is arranged by the whips, who meet together. In fact, even parties which aren't parties, like the technical group, right, have whips because they have to, someone has to meet to figure out how we're going to run the parliament. This includes pairing, if you can't come because you're deathly ill, we'll agree to keep a government member home or something like that, right, or vice versa. Or just what is going to be voted for today? How long are we going to have to do it? I mean, without this, the parliament would do nothing. And again, if you look at the United States, you just see incredible conflict. But one of the great things about Ireland, I think, is citizensinformation.ie. You can find everything there, including how to set up your own political party, which is good. And there are lovely rules about this. In fact, there's a register of political parties. So you have to have one of the following. You have to have at least 300 recorded members, age 18 or over, right? You have to have elected representatives, right? Or you have to have three members. If you're only going to contest local elections in one part of the world, you have to have at least three local authority members from that part of the country. You also have to have a constitution. You have to register, I think, with the standards in public office. You have to have an executive committee. You have to have, your finances have to be open to scrutiny and so forth. This is my favorite. This is just a way of getting your party name next to your name on the ballot. Which, as we found out through history, has proved important, right? Because maybe people just don't know you, right? But they do know they love Renew, for example, which still exists, you should know, and is taking €200,000 plus from the taxpayer to promote Renew-like interest. Because it got over €200,000 a year.
Right.
Because they got over 2% in the last election of the vote.
Okay.
So they really don't want another election because the gravy train will then leave the station. Possibly.
Yeah, right? Unless they get somebody elected.
And all these things about funding parties and funding government are all left up to legislation. But my favorite thing is, you need a symbol and you need a name. And there are rules about the name. It can't be more than 6 words long.
Okay.
Which I think finally feels like a constraint, right? It could be at least 140 characters long, right? You can't have a symbol, which is going to lead to confusion, right? And you can't have the same name as other parties. You can't be Renew 2. Because that would
be Fianna Fáil too,
and you can't have anything offensive in your symbol, which is a sort of one of my favorite sort of things.
Yeah, that's very much a matter.
But other than
opinion.
That, you can register as a political party. And I looked at the list, and it's quite striking that some political parties, which I'm not going to name because I don't want you to vote for them, and some other political parties I don't like very much either, some are registered and some aren't.
Oh, so you don't have to be registered as a political party, then.
Right? But your name is not going to appear on the ballot. The name of the party is not going to appear on the ballot.
All right. Oh, interesting.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.